Mark 2, verse 23. Well, Mark begins very abruptly, as Mark is a very fast-moving read. And it begins with John the Baptist. So it doesn't begin with the birth of Jesus. It begins with his baptism. And it really is Mark begins with Jesus' ministry. And the introduction to his ministry is John the Baptist. And John's baptism of Jesus, and then Jesus very quickly, the temptation is just stated. So the baptism is just kind of stated that it happened, the temptation that it happened. And then it moves us past John. In verse 14, it says, "Now after John had been taken into custody," and so, and it shows us what he's, his teaching. The time is fulfilled, and the kingdom of God is at hand. Repent and believe in the gospel. And then it goes through some things. We had noted that one of the words that is very prominent in Mark is the word immediately. Everything tends to be immediately, very fast paced. Even though that immediately, sometimes there would be some difference in time. It's just it's showing very quickly, as he's going through it, his take on all this. In the middle of chapter 1, verse 21 and following, there's the encounter with a man that was had a demon, and then. And, following that that encounter that evening, they go to Simon's mother-in-law, and she was sick, and Jesus heals her, and then you have many people coming to be healed that evening, and then that the next morning Jesus is up early praying. And they come looking for him and said, "Oh, there's all these people looking for you that need to be, healed." And Jesus in verse 38 says, "Let us go somewhere else to the towns nearby so that I may preach there also, for that is what I came for." And then it has it that he, encounters a man with leprosy and he heals him. A paralytic is, healed. And that's the one where they, lower him through the roof. And then has the encounter with Levi. And in verse 23, we pick up our reading. And it says, "And it happened that as he was passing through the grain fields on the Sabbath, and his disciples began to make their way along while picking the heads of grain." Now this is, according to the law, there's nothing, when you go through grain fields, one could gather something to eat. I mean, this isn't like they're taking their bushel baskets out there and, filling them up. And so this wasn't a contrary law, but the very strict interpretation with the Pharisees is they would look at that and say that's work. That they were harvesting, so it's work. And so, and Jesus shouldn't be allowing them to do this. And so in verse 24, it says, "The Pharisee will say unto him, Look, why are they doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath?" And Jesus' reply goes back to a situation with David. When David was on the run, and that group of men that was with him were hungry, what he did, it says, "Have you never read what David did when he was in need and his companions became hungry? How he entered the house of God in the time of Abinathar the high priest and ate the consecrated bread, which is not lawful for anyone to eat except the priest. And he also gave it to those who were with him." So here was a situation where this bread, this consecrated bread, this holy bread, was set aside for the priests. But yet, David came into that setting and said, you know, my men are in need. Now, probably here the big focus is this idea of need. That they had a need. And it kind of comes back to what was the purpose of the Sabbath. It was, you know, is the Sabbath for man or is man for the Sabbath? You know, I mean, who's in control? You know, what's this really about? And so this wasn't a luxury. This wasn't ill planning. This was a need. And Jesus responds and says, the Sabbath was made for man and not the man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. You know, so really the where it comes down to is it's not, Jesus isn't saying, hey, it doesn't matter what the Old Testament says, you know, we're not bound by it. He's not saying that at all. It's this idea that you have just started creating rules. This wasn't its intent ever. The restrictions on the Sabbath was to protect man, was to do something positive. I mean, really, you know, there is a whole thing of faith with the Sabbath, and especially in an agricultural society, that you don't work on the Sabbath and you have that day when you could get a lot of work done to things, and especially when you came to the Sabbath year, which wasn't recognized all that often, but you could really see when you set aside a whole year. Great faith. But one of the things, too, is the provisions for people. But yet, what happens is you come along to these things and you start making these extra rules. And so, where you were supposed to set aside on the Sabbath and not work, all of a sudden, to pick some grain off the head of a plant and eat it, that's work. And there were all kinds of things I've read that there's one of the deals was, you know, the debates was, you know, if a rock was hot enough to fry an egg, then you could do that. You know, I mean, you can't, you know, start a fire and cook an egg, but, you know, so it, all of a sudden not working became, you can't even prepare a fire to make a meal. I had a professor that, grew up in a very legalistic home. And he, and it was also at the kind of the time of the Depression. And so you had, following that, shortly after that. And so you have these things where people become very aware that you shouldn't waste stuff. And he had an uncle, kind of the black sheep of the family, that showed up on a Sunday afternoon with ice cream. Now, for us, you know, you think ice cream, what's the big deal? But you got to go back in the time period. You don't have freezers. You can't say, well, we'll put this in the freezer and you can have it tomorrow. It's either eat it now or it's gone. It's ruined. Yeah, or you wait until tomorrow and you can drink it. And, you know, and he just talked about this dilemma for his dad. Because they didn't do the frivolous things like have ice cream on Sunday. But yet you couldn't waste this. And so they ended up with ice cream on Sunday. But you think about that. How did we go from resting on the Sabbath to you don't even eat ice cream on the Sabbath? And it's the same with the fair. You know, you start making these rules, these restrictions, and that's what's happening here. But Jesus ends up saying, I'm Lord of the Sabbath. Well, one of the things, and we were talking about this earlier, and I haven't done this, I need to do it, is especially like in Mark would be a fun one because it's so condensed, is look at how many events that are recorded are events that occur on the Sabbath. And so far, most of the events we've encountered were on the Sabbath. Now, you know, it could leave us to the thought, well, Jesus really had these encounters and did these kind of things only on the Sabbath. You know, the only time he ever healed anybody was on the Sabbath. Only time, you know. Or the other one is that those are the ones recorded, Because those are the ones that involve the conflict with the Pharisees. This is what the Pharisees are after. Is you can't be going around doing this, Jesus. You know, this is just against the rules. And we see how they move from this. So in chapter 3, in verse 1, it says, he entered again into a Sabbath. Well, or into a synagogue. So this wouldn't be the same day, because, you know, same place it says he entered again. So this is probably a later time. And a man was there who had a hand, whose hand was withered. And so here's somebody that's, you know, has a damaged hand. Jesus comes in, here's this man. The man, you know, in this situation, it's not like the leper. It's not like the paralytic. Nobody's coming up and asking anything, but this man is present. They were watching him, that is the Pharisees. They were watching him to see if he would heal him on the Sabbath. Purpose? So that they might accuse him. Now, in their system, to heal somebody, if it was a life and death situation, that would be acceptable. But if it wasn't acceptable, you shouldn't be doing it. So here, instead of being impressed that Jesus could actually heal somebody, their deal is, if you do that, it's work, and you violated the Sabbath rules.
Okay, can I ask you something? Before Jesus came, did other people heal?
Well, you see, it's a great question because, and I mean, I know why you would say it, or I assume why you said it, is because why aren't they just so impressed with that as opposed to something else?
Or if they had a law that you could only heal in life and death situations, yeah. They must have been able to...
Well, not necessarily heal, though, but I mean, you had doctors, help somebody, you know. Okay. But still, why are they not more impressed? So, did true healing take place? Were there people with a gift of healing? We don't seem to know of that. Were there people that, as today, I mean, you know, to be real honest, I mean, I don't have a problem at all that, you know, theologically that somebody, is used by God to heal people. But yet I'm not convinced that all the things we hear about are legitimate either. Because seldom do we see things like this healed. Usually what we see healed is things that we cannot visually confirm.
Yeah, but for sure you would never have seen the crowd that he was healing here.
Right.
And they should be.
So, sometimes by the sheer fact that they're not impressed makes you think that it's not all that common. I mean, you know, that it wasn't uncommon. But I don't think that really is the case. I think they are so wrapped up into this situation. You know, this is what's right. This is what you got to do. And it doesn't matter. Nothing else matters.
So were they also at this time starting to condemn Jesus?
Yes. And we'll see that in this passage. This is really the beginning. I don't know. I mean, you know, in South Dakota... And I've mentioned this situation before, I'm sure, but, you know, we invited this evangelistic group, or, you know, it was this duo, they're comedians, to come. And they came on a Sunday evening, and really they were suggested to us by, you know, a couple in another, you know, that she grew up in that church, but she's, you know, lives, you know, for, you know, a couple hundred miles away. And but her dad goes to the church. Well, before the service started, you know, the guy that's with this group that's, you know, kind of their promotions guy or whatever, runs all the logistical stuff, you know, he asked if it'd be okay if they set up a booth to sell T-shirts and their, you know, records or something in. And their money goes for... And the money they make off that, they use to do evangelism in high school, put on these programs for high school. And I said, sure. Well, I mean, I had in mind a table set up, and all of a sudden they had all this PCV pipe out and had this huge display. And, you know, it was more than I ever guessed. But anyway, the guy whose daughter is the one that made the suggestion to it, he was very, you know, of course, he hated me from day one anyway. And he came and said no. And, you know, and it was this thing. So, you know, in the discussions, you know, so we, you know, you have this conflict, we end up having this kind of mediation thing over it. And, but the question was asked to him, you know, was, you know, would it have been a difference if it had been Sunday morning and Sunday night? And yes, so Sunday morning would have been totally unacceptable. Sunday night wasn't so much. Well, where do you get that? Now, I don't have any problem with preferences. Is that what we wanted to be doing in church? You know, et cetera. I have no problem with that. But in terms of this is right or this is wrong, you know, we move in those circles very quickly. And the Pharisees lived in that. You know, this was what it was all about. And so when they look at this situation, they're not impressed that he heals at all. And even if nobody's ever healed in the history of the world, because the main thing is you violated this principle. And this is all that life's about, is keeping these Sabbath rules, you know, almost. And so that's, you know, as the way I understand it, at least. And so Jesus said, anyway, their purpose was that, you know, that they're there for one purpose. To see, you know, they want to find something to accuse them. You know, and, you know, sometimes, you know, you listen to some of these things that go on. Political things are the main ones that you can pick this up in our nation. You know, when people are not, you could care less what the context is. They just want that one little statement that we can accuse somebody of. And sometimes I'll read some of these things. And there was one at Obama at West Point last year. This, you know, and you read the statements that he made. I just, you know, it's like, you've got to be kidding. Because it was something like, I have sovereign authority or something like this. It's like, when did the president get sovereign? That wasn't an exact term. Well, then, you know, and that's what you read in certain circles. Then you go, so I went and read the speech. And the context is totally different. Because what he's saying, and I guess this is kind of a customary thing. I'm not positive about that. I assumed it was. But those that were on restrictions for, and he said, you know, as president, I have certain limitations, but, you know, as commander-in-chief, you know, I'm absolute or something. And so I forgot the terms, and it's not, you know, it didn't say pardon, but whatever these terms are, you know, I pardon you of this. And so it's taking these restrictions away. And, you know, and everybody's clapping. It's totally different than an arrogant guy saying, I'm sovereign over. But so if you're looking for something to accuse them at, you take that one little statement out of context, you know it's out of context, and you put it out there. That's what we got to find something. And they're just following around looking for something.
Well, it's back to what you said, they're just so single-minded.
Yeah, it's already made up. We don't like this guy. Yeah. And so anyway, Jesus says, we're in chapter 3, verse 3. Jesus said to the man with the withered hand, get up and come forward. Now, you know, these are these passages that you just gotta love. I mean, that we just know nothing about. You know, we don't know why the guy's hand's withered. We don't know if it's been withered forever. You know, everybody knows him, so we think it's been for a while. And what does he think? Get up and come forward. Well, he happens to know something of Jesus. You gotta assume he's thinking, hey, this is a good deal. But is he terrified? Is he, you know what I mean? Yeah. You know, what if this guy goes, no, I don't want to come. I don't know. You know, it's just so funny. You know, get up and come forward. You know, this is like, this guy has nothing to do with it almost. It's just intriguing.
There's a possibility he could have heard from other situations since there have been so many of them.
Yeah.
And Pharisees didn't like
this. Yeah. Yeah, and so what kind of pressure? Yeah, it's just interesting because it's as though this man has nothing to do with the story. You know, and yet in one sense he's the very center of it. But yet, so it's kind of interesting. And Jesus said to them, so he's talking back to the Pharisees, is it lawful to do good or to do harm on the Sabbath? To save a life or to kill? But they kept silent. So he asked them a direct question. And they won't answer. You know, is it lawful to do good or to do harm? Well, you can't do harm. But again, it was that thing of doing good. Well, you can do good if it's to save a life, but if it could wait until tomorrow, we shouldn't be doing it. And so they don't even respond. You know, they're just, they can't interact with it because they're not really, you know, they're, it's not this honest debate. It's, you know, we know what we're after, and so really that's the situation. I mean, if Jesus was here and he has the ability to heal this guy, you know, and you're going to say we can't do it because it's the Sabbath, then the Sabbath is in control. The Sabbath is superior to people. People, the Sabbath, you know, exist not for man, but man exists to serve the Sabbath. And Jesus is saying that's never what it was supposed to be. So after looking around at them with anger, grieved at their hardness of heart. So here's this deal, you know, and if we go back a passage, you know, or a chapter, we had where Jesus said, you know, let's go somewhere else because, you know, I've got a mission. And my mission is to, you know, I've got to spread this word. Well, then as he's walking down that road, he encounters somebody. And it's because of compassion that Jesus will stop and deal with it. You know, he's, in many ways, you could say Jesus is single-minded. He knows that mission. He's steadfast going here, but yet, he gets distracted. Why does he get distracted? Because of compassion. And here, it's just a hardness of heart. These guys aren't distracted. They could care less about this guy. His withered hand, who cares? It's our rules that are important. So after looking around them, he's angry, he's grieved, and he says to the man, stretch out your hand. Now, this is the part that's interesting is, where is the work that Jesus does? I mean, he's talking. He's giving commands. But the only person that does any physical labor here is the guy with the withered hand who raises his arm up. And, you know, one of the, I mean, one, you know, I mean, there's so many intriguing things in the gospel is that, and I wouldn't say this absolutely, but I'm not sure anybody is ever healed the same way. It just is. You know, there's something about the situation that kind of controls what Jesus does. But it's, you know, in this situation, he just says, raise your hand. There's no thing about faith. There's no, I mean, other than raising his hand, which, you know, involves some response, that's it. He stretched it out, and his hand was restored. So if you're a Pharisee, and you're looking to accuse Jesus of something, exactly what do you call this? Even this, what do you call it? He worked? When you go back to tell this story to get everybody all riled up, I mean, exactly what do you report? I mean, okay, we got to get rid of this Jesus guy. He went in the synagogue on the Sabbath, and there's a guy there, you know, his hands all bunged up, and you know, it's just not right. You know, he's healing on the Sabbath. Okay, tell us what happened. Well, he told the guy to raise his hand up. And the guy raised his hand up and he was healed. Did he touch him? No. Nope. Did he apply any medicine? No. Nope. Did he do any potion? No. Nope. Did he say abracadabra? No. Nope. we were just talking before you came in, one of the things so amazing is how are they not amazed at what they're seeing? But they're so involved into their rules, not actually the law, but their rules, that it controls everything. So the Pharisees went out and immediately began conspiring with the Herodians against Jesus, him, as to how they might destroy him. Now, the Pharisees are this religious group. We have a negative view of the Pharisees, somewhat correct, but yet sometimes maybe we don't appreciate, their zeal devotion and those kinds of things. The Herodians, that's the ones that are a political group supporting the king. Well, these two groups, these are not natural, let's get along kind of people. And, when you see people that don't have common ground, they're just kind of normally want to fight each other, and they get together on something, they found something of mutual interest, and that's what brings them together. And it's such an odd group. Well, that's this. That's what this is. And this, notice where we're at in Mark. We're in the beginning of chapter 3. And Mark's deal is, okay, from now on, this is Jesus is headed toward death. And, Mark is just, it's boom. This conflict has been brewing. It's big time now. And they're after Jesus. And that's where he's...
I almost imagine this, having young children that tell me stories, is that anticipation. He knows the ending. And so he's just...
And then this, but the ending is
what I really want to get to. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened. Yeah.
Any questions or?
Well, things? This passage, I've heard it taught before, and I don't know where the conclusion came from, but they thought that the Pharisees had actually...
I remember you mentioning it. I should have looked that up. I didn't even think about that today.
Crushed the man's hand.
Because of some tents or something.
Yeah.
Because it had been withered.
Yeah, and the hardness of their hearts and the hand being restored, I think, were some of the parts of the passage.
Yeah.
And I don't know how accurate that could be, but certainly if that were the case, it puts a really different spin on the hardness of heart of the Pharisees if they
would have done this
on the Sabbath.
We have to do this on Sunday night, so you'll be ready for it.
I don't know. I'll try to look at that.
I
don't.
Think that
I've never
on the Sabbath to do good or to do evil. It would be interesting to. I don't know that I have anything that would give me any more details as to why that was the conclusion.
Yeah, I remember that being mentioned before, but I don't know, and I'm not sure how. I know of nothing that one could use to make that conclusion. And I've never heard of it, but other than that. But I'll try to remember and look at that and see if I can see anything. Because, yes, it would in terms of... it's kind of two things. One, it would explain their hardness of heart, though. But then the other one, it would, as you're saying, if it occurred in that sense of doing good or doing evil. So I don't know. That's interesting. I'll try to remember that. Well, there are prayer requests.